Krishna, Krishna. Hey, there you are. You snuck in. In the corner. Howdy, both of you. Thanks for bringing. You bring a truckload of people, or they come on their own? Yeah, they come by the truckload from Krishna House these days. Okay, everybody ready, more or less? Okay. We're on chapter 9 today. Canto 1, chapter 9. Text number... Oops. 9? I already forgot. Text number 9. 9 through... Is it 9? Starting, right? Thanks. I was just testing you. 12. Text number 12. Chapter 9, text 12. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
I'm all wrong. Om Namo. Can you just, is it chapter 9? Okay, don't listen to anything I said except for Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Thanks. We're on chapter 12, and we're doing text 12, and we'll read through to text 19. Narayanam Namaskritya Naram Jaiva Narottamam Devim Saraswatim Vyasam Tato Jayam Udirayat Nasta Prayeshu Apadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttama Shloke Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtaki. Before reciting this Srimad Bhagavatam, which is our very means of conquest, one should offer respectful obeisances unto the personality of Godhead. Narayan. Unto Naranaran Rishi, the supermost human being. Unto Mother Saraswati, the goddess of learning. And unto Srila Vyasadeva, the author. And by regular attendance in classes on the Bhagavatam, and by rendering service unto the pure devotees, all that is inauspicious in the heart is almost completely destroyed. And loving service unto the personality of Godhead, who is praised with transcendental songs, is established as an irrevocable fact. Okay, chapter 12, the birth of Maharaj Parikit. We're on text 12. Tata sarva guno darke shanukula grahodaye yajje vamsa dara pandur Buya Pandur Ivaujasa. Are you ready to chant with one verse? Go ahead. Tata Sarva Guno Darke Shanukula Grahodaye Yagye Vamsa Dara Pandur Buya Pandor Ivo Jasa Tata Sarva Guno Darke Sanukula Guno Daye Yagye Vamsa Dara Pandor Buya Pandor Ivo Jasa Tata. Thereupon, sarva, all, guna, good signs, udarke, having gradually evolved, sa anukula, All favorable.
Rahodaye.
Constellation of stellar influence. Jagje Jade took birth. Vamsadhara, heir apparent. Pando of Pandu. Bhuya, being. Pandu Eva, exactly like Pandu. Ojasa, by prowess. Translation in purport by Srila Prabhupada. Thereupon, when all the good signs of the zodiac gradually evolved, the heir apparent of Pandu, who would be exactly like him in prowess, took birth. Let's say that together. Thereupon, when all the good signs of the zodiac gradually evolved, the heir apparent of Pandu, who would be exactly like him in prowess, took birth. So who is the heir of Pandu? Parikshit. So who can tell me a little bit about, so far, about what's happening with Maharaj Parikshit? So far in the chapter, what's been discussed? Dipti? Oh, that's the wrong name, right? That's my... Ashvatthama. And do you remember any part of Uttara's prayer? She had a really nice prayer when she approached the Lord. Was that already in this chapter? Or was it probably, might have been a previous chapter.
Chapter 7.
Ooh, that's really a long time ago. Can you remember anything? Maybe a phrase or two from Uttara's prayer, Gopal, when she approached Krishna?
She started out by saying something like, "This fiery arrow is coming at me fast."
Yeah, yeah. Krishna, Krishna, Mahabah, Yogi. Okay, anyway. But then after she talked about the fiery arrow, she said, as a mother's always concerned for the child, she was concerned for the child in her womb. So she said, "Let the arrow kill me if it needs to, but don't let it harm my child." She prayed for the safety of her child, Maharaj Parikshit. So here we're going to, as you've been hearing in this chapter, some of the qualities of Parikshit. Here you're going to hear in this series of verses from 12 to 19, some more characteristics of Maharaj Parikshit's good qualities. So we'll start with the purport. Gopal, you've got the mic. Can you start reading in the purport there? In verse 12, yeah. We're gonna concentrate on verse 12 and then we'll read the other verses.
Did we read the verse?
We did read it, but you could say it again.
Oh, okay. Thereupon, when all the good signs of the zodiac gradually evolved, the heir apparent of Pandu, who would be exactly like him in prowess, took birth. Purport. Astronomical calculations of stellar influence upon a living being are not suppositions, but are factual, as confirmed in Srimad Bhagavatam. Every living being is controlled by the laws of nature at every minute, just as a citizen is controlled by the influence of the state. The state laws are grossly observed, but the laws of material nature, being subtle to our gross understanding, cannot be experienced grossly.
So Srila Prabhupada, thank you. So Srila Prabhupada is right there giving us a very logical explanation about the influences of the stars, you know, on the conditioned living entities. Very logical. What was the example that he gave there that made it really clear how there's different influences on the living entity? What was the example? State laws. Chintamani, can you just say it again? Yeah. Yeah. Makes sense, doesn't it? I mean, even we might think, however independently we might think, still we're, you know, careful when we go out on the road, when we're driving our car, that we follow the, sometimes we're careful, but anyway, we're still, in general, you follow the traffic signs, you follow the rules here, there. In so many ways, those rules of the state influence our activities in so many ways. So that's, Prabhupada says, that's a gross manifestation of laws. But the influence of the stars, it's more subtle. Now he's going to continue to explain it. Clayton, you want to grab the microphone, please, and continue?
As stated in the Bhagavad Gita 3.9, every action of life produces another reaction, which is binding upon us, and only those who are acting on behalf of Yajna, Vishnu, are not bound by reactions.
Hold on a second. Krishna Kripa, can you remind us what 3.9 is in Bhagavad Gita? Krishna Kripa Prabhu, it doesn't count to put your hands in front of your mouth. Okay, all right. Otherwise, unless you're doing something for Vishnu, Krishna, the Lord, your actions will bind you. Unless it's bhakti, those activities done in bhakti for the Lord, they're not going to bind you to the material world. But any other activity has its binding influence. Continue, Clayton, please.
Our actions are judged by the higher authorities, the agents of the Lord. And thus we are awarded bodies according to our activities. The law of nature is so subtle that every part of our body is influenced by the respective stars. And a living being obtains his working body to fulfill his terms of imprisonment by the manipulation of such astronomical influence.
So there's a piece of information there that might be a little new to us. Did anyone catch it in that sentence that he read? I mean, we're talking about the influences of the stars on the living being, their characteristics and this and that. But what was the least more... Every part of the body is under the control. In other words, we can't even blink our eyes unless there's a higher authority allowing us to do it. Interesting, isn't it? We're thinking, and the illusion is, we're thinking we're free. And we're thinking we're independent, too. I can decide if I want to follow these rules, or I can do this, and I can do that. And by me and my endeavor, the illusion is so great. Another, the previous sentence, or a couple of sentences. Our actions are judged by higher authorities, the agents of the Lord. And thus, we are awarded bodies according to our activities. For ourselves as devotees, it's not new information, but it's ever fresh information. And it's always nice to be reminded of these things. Because taking this information that we have so far, we're not even halfway through the purport. But based on the information that we've got so far from Srila Prabhupada, based on Vedic authority, it gives us another perspective on life. Now, in general or in modern age, there's the tendency to think that I'm suffering because of my conditioning, because my childhood, my mother wasn't so good at rearing children, and she used the wrong method. Maybe she followed Dr. Spock, who's now outdated, and then this or that or whatever. And now I am, and it's all my parents' fault or my conditioning. Or when I was in school, my teachers they picked on me, they didn't like me, and this, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But here we've got information that totally changes that concept around. So can somebody verbalize the concept, the correct concept of our situation, what we're in, by the information that we've got so far? Can you pass the mic over to Olivia? Thanks.
Everything that we experience is determined based upon our previous activities and our previous use of our free will.
Yeah. You want to just say it again so that it sinks in? You know what I mean? It's totally true, and yet at the same time, it's another one of those things that we're thinking differently. Go on.
Everything that we experience and that we're exposed to is determined based upon our past activities or the use of our free will. So actually, I feel like we think we have so much free will, but really so many things are happening, and only like if we use our free will properly when those things happen in the service of Krishna, then we're no longer bound, but we consistently misuse our free will, so constantly we're just getting karmic reactions always.
Yeah, based on what we've done. you know, and how we react to a new situation that we're in, how we react, then we're incurring either more reaction or maybe we might have stopped that reaction coming. Yeah, and yet still the mind so quickly goes to its old conditioning. That's why reading the Bhagavatam, you need to read every day. We need to read every day. We need to develop the habit of reading every day, because here we're coming in contact with ever fresh transcendental information. It's not old and hackneyed at all. And at the same time, even though we've heard it repeatedly, still our conditioning since when? Since time immemorial, nitya bhuta, or practically since time immemorial, we've been in the material world trying to enjoy in so many unusual ways that we're just conditioned like that. And here we're getting how to get a psychological adjustment, you know, change our thinking. Can we continue? You want to pass it on? Thanks. Yeah, a man's destiny, right? Is that where we are? Okay.
A man's destiny is therefore ascertained by the birth time constellation of stars, and a factual horoscope is made by a learned astrologer. It is a great science, and misuse of a science does not make it useless.
Isn't that a great sentence also? It's a great science. It's a factual science. But just because it's been misused or misunderstood doesn't make it any less important. It's actually a science. So what about that? How does that sentence make you feel? A man's destiny is therefore ascertained by the birth time constellation of stars. It's all destiny. Lakshmi? Okay, that's a nice perspective. Thank you. Okay, all right, so, yeah. Jai Shri Krishna. Did I get it right this time? Thanks, sorry. No. I'm the only one who hasn't seen it, sorry. Go on. I'm going to skip over that for a minute. Do we already make the choices? We've already made the karmic reaction. Anyway. All right. But predetermined destiny. Okay, let's focus on that. Because sometimes people criticize philosophies that talk about destiny, that it takes away one's impetus for improvement because it's all destiny. Can you think of someone in the pages of the Bhagavatam, not in the first canto, but later on, that talks a little bit about this destiny in another amazing way, talking about happiness and distress, destiny, it's already destined. He was young. He was only 5 years old. Oh, shoot. Yeah, he was. You were thinking of Chitraketu. He might have said something, not did he, somebody who said something, was a young personality. Prahlad Maharaj, but what did he say? You guessed the right person, but now you have to tell us what he said. Do you know, Estefania, what Prahlad said about happiness and distress? He said happiness and distress. Who's there? Can you just say it again? Comes and goes of its. That's true. That's good. Matrasparsastu konteya. It comes and goes if only one has to tolerate. That's true. Prahlad Maharaj, he was saying that happiness and distress are born along with you at your birth. And it doesn't make any difference how much you endeavor for happiness. You're going to get X amount of happiness. You're going to get X amount of distress. It's born with you along with your birth. And surprisingly enough, the more you endeavor for happiness, the more you get distress. You get exactly the opposite of what you're trying to do. Unless, of course, as Krishna Kripa Prabhu pointed out, unless, of course, one makes the endeavor for transcendental understanding, transcendental realization. But still, that sometimes if we take information out of context, then it's not, you can't apply it properly. So that idea of a man's destiny is therefore ascertained at birth time. So why do anything? Why go to school? She asked at Krishna House. And she was never invited back after that. No, sorry. So why do anything if it's all predestined? So what are you going to say to that, Prabhu?
We have to walk through the door and find out why.
You watched the movie too much. Gopal? Can you pass the mic over to Gopal, please? Thanks. I just want to say one thing about movies. Sometimes when we watch the Mahabharata, we think, yeah, I know the Mahabharata. The Mahabharata isn't exactly like it is in the video. You need to read the Mahabharata.
What was the question?
The question is, if one's destiny is born at the time of death, ascertained at the time, why do anything? Why endeavor for anything?
It's my understanding that we do have some control over what happens in this lifetime. Okay. The other thing is, well, just take the challenge. Okay, well, let's see you just do nothing. Let's see you just lie like a python or whatever.
That reminds me of somebody who did that. He was mentioned in the Bhagavatam too, the python sage, and it had to do with Prahlad Maharaj. And Prahlad Maharaj met him and he said, oh, my dear sir, you're a little fatty. I'm surprised that you're a little fatty if you don't do anything. And he said, well, whatever comes my way. Sometimes I'm treated very nicely, and sometimes I go for days without eating. But whatever comes my way due to destiny. Anyway, it's a great understanding like that is a very elevated position. We make our endeavor, but what's the crux of the issue is to not be attached to the results. We make our, just like Srila Prabhupada, he made his endeavor to come to the West to preach, but he wasn't attached to the results. Krishna gave him so many wonderful results, not right in the beginning, not immediately. It wasn't like predestined smooth ride. He made his endeavor, but not attached to the results, depending on Krishna for everything, the good things and the bad things, the hard times and the good times, and therefore endeavored to please the Lord in an unattached way. Again, it's very easy to say. These things are easy to say, but to apply them in our life takes endeavor. Okay, you can only ask one question, Olivia. What's your question?
I guess it's like a comment, but I just want to make sure it's right. So Srila Prabhupada said that in this lifetime we can go back to Godhead. Mm. So therefore then, that's not predetermined. That's not based upon fate or destiny, whether or not we go back to Godhead in this lifetime. That's based upon whether or not we use our free will properly. Is that correct?
That's good. That's based on Srila Prabhupada's mercy also. You know, that's another point that the only thing that we're able to do is choose free will. And everything else, once you make your choice, then everything else is, if one's choosing material activities, then one's conditioned under the actions and reactions of their choice. For one who chooses, makes the attempt to try to become a devotee of Krishna, then everything, as Krishna Kripa was saying, everything changes. So Prabhupada said, yes, we can go back to Godhead in this very lifetime. And then he said how it is. When it, follow the four regulative principles, chant 16 rounds, read my books. And if we choose to follow those through our whole life, then that guarantee is there. Okay, Gopal. And then we're going on.
Sometimes it's described that, like when you get on an airplane going to California, you're going to California unless you hijack the plane. Mm. Or you can sit next to a businessman and make $1 million, or you can could commit a crime and get arrested when you land. But you're going to California. But you do have some. You do have the ability to perform some actions that are going to make some immediate results.
Difference. Yeah. Thank you. Okay. Let's continue on. Who are you? Michael. Okay, thanks, Michael. You get to continue if you can remember where we are.
Maharaj Pariksit, or even the personality of Godhead, appear in certain constellations of good stars, and thus the influence is exerted upon the body, thus born at an auspicious moment. The most auspicious constellation of stars takes place during the appearance of the Lord in this material world, and it is specifically called Jayanti, a word not to be abused for any other purposes.
Do you know what Prabhupada's insinuating there about this word Jayanti? Yeah, you do. Okay. Because you come from the land of Jayantis. But let's see if everyone else understands. What's Prabhupada saying there when he says this word is Jayanti, is meant for the appearance of the Lord, and it's not to be misused in any other way? Do you understand what he's saying? Chaitanya, do you? Yeah, which, right. Okay. And also it refers to now in modern time they have Gandhi's birthday, Jayanti, this one, Jayanti, that one. But it's not, it's actually for the Supreme Lord. Please continue.
Maharaja Pariksit was not only a great Kshatriya emperor, but also a great devotee of the Lord. Thus he cannot take his birth at any inauspicious moment.
Thank you. You want to continue, Sri Krishna? Jai Sri
Krishna. As a proper place,
Krishna.
As a proper place and time is selected to receive a respectable personage, so also to receive such a personality as Maharaj Pariksit, who was especially cared for by the Supreme Lord, a suitable moment is chosen.
Go ahead. Just finish that.
When all good stars assemble together to exert their influence upon the king.
That's a really nice explanation, too. Can somebody repeat it in their own words? Hopefully you didn't miss it. There's a really nice explanation.
Just to receive a good person, we prepare a proper place, proper time, and make all the arrangements.
Yeah.
In a similar way, Maharaj Pariksit was very special for his arrival.
And he took birth when all the stars were in an auspicious constellation. Thank you. You want to pass it on to Krishna Kripa Prabhu? Thus
he took his birth just to be known as the great hero, Srimad Bhagavatam. This suitable arrangement of astral influence is never a creation of man's will, but it's an arrangement of the superior management of the agency of the Supreme Lord. Of course, the arrangement is made according to the good or bad deeds of the living being. Herein lies the importance of pious acts performed by the living being. Only by pious acts can one be allowed to get good wealth, good education, and beautiful features. The samskaras of the school of Sanatana Dharma, man's eternal engagement, are highly suitable for creating the atmosphere for taking advantage of good stellar influences. And therefore, Garbhadan Sangskara, or the first seedling purificatory process prescribed for the higher caste, is the beginning of all pious acts to receive a good, pious, and intelligent class of men in human society. There will be peace and prosperity in the world due to a good and sane population only. There is hell and disturbance only because of the unwanted and sane populace addicted to sex indulgence.
Does anybody want to argue against that last statement? No, it makes, I mean, even though we come from, even though some of us are products of that insane population addicted to sex indulgence, still, by hearing from Srila Prabhupada, It just makes so much sense, you know. It's not dogmatic. It's not beyond the ability of the intelligence to comprehend and grab onto and try to mold one's life in a proper way. So there's lots. I just want to keep talking and talking about this verse, but I'm not going to. Okay, so we're on text 13. Does anybody have any more comments or questions on that one verse? Oh, gosh, I shouldn't ask that. Okay, hold on. Don't forget it, all right? And then, because otherwise I'll get in trouble. Okay, you get to go, Shruti Shagar. Text 13. You can just read the translation.
King Yudhishthira, who was very satisfied with the birth of Maharaj Parikshit, had a prefectory process of birth performed. Learned Brahmanas, headed by Dhamya and Kripa, recited auspicious hymns.
Okay, so we're not going to read the purport here. I can tell you that in the next couple of purports, there's going to be a lot of information about the people that are mentioned and the stories behind their lives and everything. Quite interesting, no doubt. But we're just going to continue on.
Upon the birth of a son, the king, who knew how, where, and when charity should be given, gave gold, land, villages, elephants, horses, and good food grains to the Brahmanas.
The learned Brahmanas, who were very satisfied with the charity of the king, addressed him as the chief amongst the Purus and informed him that his son was certainly in the line of descent from the Purus.
The Brahmana said, "This spotless son has been restored by the all-powerful and all-pervasive Lord Vishnu, the personality of Godhead, in order to oblige you. He was saved when he was doomed to be destroyed by an irresistible supernatural weapon.
For this reason, this child will be well known in the world as one who is protected by the personality of Godhead. O most fortunate one, there is no doubt that this child will become a first-class devotee and will be qualified with all good qualities."
The good King Yudhishthira inquired, "O great souls, will he become as saintly a king, as pious in his very name, and as famous and glorified in his achievements as others who appeared in this great royal family?"
19 is our last verse. Okay.
The learned Brahmana said, "O son of Pritha, this child shall be exactly like King Ikshvaku, son of Manu, in maintaining all those who are born. And as for following the Brahminical principles, especially in being true to his promise, he shall be exactly like Rama, the personality of Godhead, the son of Maharaj Dasharatha."
Okay, so let's read a little bit in this purport here. We have a minute or two. The beginning of the purport. Just before you start, so he's going to make a point in the beginning of this purport, again referring to the points that were made in that text 12 that we're reading. Go on.
Praja means the living being who has taken his birth in the material world. Actually, the living being has no birth and no death, but because of his separation from the service of the Lord and due to his desire to lord it over the material nature, he is offered a suitable body to satisfy his material desires. In doing so, one becomes conditioned by the laws of material nature, and the material body is changed in terms of his own work.
Again, that point is being stressed, that we're in this situation because of activities that we've done previously. It's not the result of chance. It's not the result of anyone else's difficulty or problems. It's our own activities that have led us to this, and our own activities can lead us beyond this body also if we choose transcendental activities. Continue.
The living entity thus transmigrates from one body to another in 8,400,000 species of life. But due to his being the part and parcel of the Lord, he not only is maintained with all the necessaries of life by the Lord, but also is protected by the Lord and his representatives, the saintly kings. These saintly kings give protection to all the prajas, or living beings, to live and to fulfill their terms of imprisonment. Maharaj Parikshit was actually an ideal saintly king because while touring his kingdom, he happened to see a poor cow was about to be killed by the personified Kali, whom he at once took to task as a murderer. This means that even the animals were given protection by the saintly administrators, not from any sentimental point of view, but because those who have taken their birth in the material world have the right to live.
So that's such a simple statement there. It's another one of Srila Prabhupada's revolutionary statements. Anyone who's taken birth has the right to live. And if their life is cut off shorter than their duration of time that they've been allotted for our whimsical ideas of whatever, then those living entities have to undergo great, terrible suffering. And we, the person who inflicts that pain or cuts their duration short, they have a reaction too. So this is like to try to understand how entangling karma is very, very difficult. It's so entangling. And somehow or other, I've been born according to the past activities that I've committed, and somehow or other, I interact with different people and entangle myself with them, and they get into it. It's just extremely... It can never... Karma, the process of trying to work your way out of the material world by doing good deeds is a fallacy. It can't happen. You can never do it. Because it just the nature of karmic activities is so entangling that they don't allow you to get free by doing them. There's always the reaction. Even... not just the negative reaction, but the positive. The reaction for pious activities is entangling. It requires someone to take birth again to enjoy the quote-unquote fruits of those pious activities. And in that life of enjoying the fruits of pious activities, more karmic activities are accrued, which entangle one. Srila Prabhupada explains that when the living entity turns his back or somehow or other, when the idea of not wanting to serve Krishna enters the mind of the living entity in the spiritual world, when he turns his back on that attitude and comes to the material world, the first birth that the living entity takes is as like a Lord Brahma. And from there, he doesn't make progress and go back quickly, but becomes entangled and degrades himself to lower and lower species of life. And so we can see how long ago we might have, well, no, we can't even imagine how long ago we might have been in a position like Lord Brahma and how long ago it was and how we got entangled to be where we are now. It's so... Nitya Buddha. It's a eternally conditioned. Continue. Vaikuntha Leela? Do you want to read? Yeah, thanks.
All the things king bringing from the king of the sun globe down to the king of the earth are so inclined by the influence of Vedic literatures. The Vedic literatures are taught in higher planets also, as there is reference in the Bhagavad Gita 4.1 about the teaching to the sun god, Vivishvam, by the Lord. And such lessons are transferred by this succession, as it was done by the sun god to his son Manu. And from Manu to Maharaj
Ikshvaku. Okay, so thank you. So what's the point of talking about these saintly kings? What's the point of talking about their position in society? What is their responsibility? You have the mic. You get to answer.
To set an example of proper way to live and to keep society, like to keep the goal of society as worshiping God.
Yeah, they have such. Dwijamani, can you? To serve Lord Krishna. They have that responsibility. They have a great responsibility, and that's why there's one disciplic succession that talks, that goes right to the Kshatriyas, Vivaswan, and because their responsibility for the prajas, through taking, give protection to the prajas, and directing people, all people, to the service of the Lord. So there's 10 minutes left. Lakshmi, do you want to either you had a comment or a question? Can we pass the mic down to Lakshmi, please?
This was discussed before right now, but I couldn't really understand how free will plays a role in a life which is predestined.
It's a great discussion. How free will plays a role in the life that's predestined. It's a great discussion that goes on quite elaborately. When we were doing our Bhakti Shastri course in Vrindavan, this one devotee was pointing out that Vyasadeva, he says ultimately that the living entity is the doer. The living entity is the doer. They can choose. Our choice is in what we're going to do. Are we going to try to understand our position as servant of God, or are we going to try to reinforce our misconception of I'm the enjoyer, I'm the center of my universe? So the living entity has that choice, and therefore scriptures are given to guide. So that's one philosophical argument that shows that we do have a choice, even though so many things are predestined. Suffering might be predestined, but what's our attitude towards that suffering, and what's our activity while that's going on? Just like Lord Brahma in the 14th chapter, 10th canto, Tate Nukampam Susamikshamanam, he says that if one goes on suffering the results of his past activities, but when something good comes his way, he's offering his prayer to the Supreme Lord. Oh, my dear Lord, I've turned away from you for so long, but still you're so kind that you're, you know, this good thing is happening. I don't deserve this. I deserved a lot worse. But somehow or other, you're so kind. You're allowing this. I offer my respects to you. Okay, so that's when something good happens. When something bad happens, when there's suffering, pain, distress, whatever, he's thinking, the living entity thinks, I deserve worse. Due to my huge backlog of karmic activities and sinful activities, I actually deserve worse. But Krishna, you're so kind. You're just giving me this little bit. Let me offer my respects to you and continue on with my endeavors. And I offer my love to you. So that attitude, Lord Brahma says, by that attitude alone, one becomes eligible to enter the kingdom of God. Now, okay, that's totally a different take on things than some. So someone has their husband or wife dies, or their children, you know, and there's some distress in this family and in that family. And how they deal with it is very important, and what their attitude is and how it affects their life. It's so you might say, well, attitude isn't a really big thing, but attitude means how are you going to act in everything too, because of your attitude. So in a family, let's say a family of transcendentalists, some tragedy happens. It's not that tragedy doesn't happen in aspiring transcendentalists. Even look at the Srimad Bhagavatam, the first prayers offered in Srimad Bhagavatam, Queen Kunti. Her whole family suffered so much. It's not that somehow or other we have the misconception that if we take to devotional service, we're never going to suffer again and everything's going to be hunky-dory, you know. But it's not true. But how one faces those sufferings and their attitude during those sufferings, that's what's going to be different. And that's what's going to shape their whole life in a different way. So Queen Kunti, she's suffering. Her sons are, they're trying to kill all her sons, this and that. Her husband dies. So many things happened. They steal her son's kingdom right out from under them. They send him off to the forest. So many things. And what's her attitude is, can you send me some more suffering, please? Because this, and during this suffering, I can remember you. We're not wishing suffering on anyone, but actually, just in my insignificant life, I've experienced that. When the most difficult time in life, what are you doing? Krishna, help! La la la, Krishna! You know, Krishna, la, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. And when things get, what was Ekendra? Ekendra's song? When it, yeah, I think I like it. And when it lets up a little, sorry, I won't. When it lets up a little, I think I like it here. You know, and when the suffering lets up, then things get back in their place and I can go on and I can enjoy. Oh, yeah. So Queen Kunti's saying she's suffering tremendous, more than any of us have ever gone through anything like that. And she's saying, can I have these sufferings again and again so that I can remember you? Because by remembering you, I know that I'm not going to see birth and death again. You're allergic to something today, aren't you? Sorry. Okay, So let's just say in her life, we'll use her example. It was the plan of the Lord, but still you could use the example. So it was predestined suffering, but how did she use that? She used it for her, you know, utmost good and our utmost good, because by her offering those prayers and us getting to read it, we come to a level that we never would have come to for millions of years on our own experience and realization. So suffering is there, and how one uses it, that's not predestined. So for somebody, so what does Bhagavad Gita say? Bhagavad Gita says that if one has a stock of piety, has some piety in their life, then when they're distressed, when they're suffering, when they want wealth, then they can turn to God. If there's no piety in their life, there's no pious activities, then they become agnostic or atheistic or angry or so many. There has to be some. So in our text 12, Prabhupada was saying toward the end of the purport, therefore it's very important, some pious activities. And we're not talking about mundane piety, although it's just said like that. We're talking about transcendental activities. So, for example, in our sojourn in Krishna consciousness, we're starting off in so many different places and endeavors. So my suggestion would be is try to take advantage of your youth, of your intelligence, of your enthusiasm now, some of us, and do as much as you can. Chant as enthusiastically as you can. Chant, read as much as you can. Learn as much as you can now. Life has its course. There might be so much suffering, this, that, destined in your future, in the near future. But take advantage of the moments of remembrance. Doesn't actually matter what age, but the moments of remembrance of Krishna, take advantage of that. Offer prayers and gratitude and cultivate that so that we can remember Krishna more, because by cultivating it, you'll be able to do that. And then when karmic fruits are mature and destiny is there, the suffering, you'll have transcendental strength on how to deal with it. Yes, my dear?
Can you please read the other six translations also?
Didn't I do that? You mean up to checks 19? I'm only supposed to do it to 19, and we did our job. So which other six are you, okay, is somebody referring to? Those same six? We did read them, thank you. It's all right, it's all right. See, I have a reputation of not doing my duty, so. Okay. Mr. Shruti Sarkar, here.
I was thinking how in the Bhagavad Gita, in one of the purpose we were reading once, and it said, if someone meets a pure devotee by chance, and we were debating, like, how can it be a chance? And so how does that play? Like, how do we meet a pure devotee? Like, sometimes it seems that, oh, it's destined like someone was kind of destined to come to Krishna consciousness, like things happen and like that.
Okay. Clayton, would you like to answer?
Well, so many people have heard this already, so I'm going to cut to the chase. It was by chance. I mean, I had no idea that living in Gainesville, I would just one day be working at someone's house, and she would give me a book that...
Maybe fixing your windows, you mean?
Yeah, and then she would give me a book that contained the Maha Mantra.